So the readings from Isaiah 53, verses 4 to 6. Surely he took up our infirmities and carried our sorrows. Yet we considered him stricken by God, smitten by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him, and by his wounds we are healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all.
Well, thank you very much, Louise, for reading out that passage for us. And if you could please keep that passage open, that would be a big help. If you've lost the place, we're on page 740, page 740. And in addition, there's a little outline on the back of the sheet if that's something you find helpful. 007, license to kill, suave, sophisticated, savvy. Gets the car, gets the girl, gets the baddies in a different way. Saves the day, saves himself, saves the nation, saves the world. Queen and country, what a hero. The credits roll, all is well, yet another Bond film. But here in our passage, in Isaiah, at Easter, the story doesn't go that way. It doesn't, you see, seem to end that well. At Easter, the story doesn't seem to end very well at all. The hero suffers terribly and dies. The mission is to die. Of course, we're so familiar with the Easter story that perhaps that doesn't shock us anymore, doesn't have any shock value. We know what happened at Easter. We know that Jesus died on the cross. And yet, we should be shocked if we understand what is going on at Easter time. This is supposed to be God's king, the ruler of the universe, and he dies a convict's death, and it doesn't seem to end well. Of course, that's not what usually happens in the movies, at least in Hollywood, maybe in a kind of French existentialist film, it happens a bit different. But it's not very commercial, is it? It's not very Hollywood. It doesn't have that comfy feel-good factor, does it? No other religion or movement celebrates the death of its founder more than the life of its founder. Other religions or movements have all kinds of symbols, don't they? A crescent, a lotus flower, a wheel or a rainbow or whatever it is. But the symbol of Christianity, as we know, is a cross. Celebrities wear it on a chain around their necks, as if wearing a noose around your neck. It is a surprising thing, once we think about it. And at this point, many think, pointless. Cut down in his prime, just 3 years of public ministry. That's less time than Obama, less time than David Cameron. If only he'd lived longer. He could have done so much good. He could have solved some of the big problems of our day. Sorted out the Middle East, sorted out the EU, and maybe even sorted out the Donald. What a shame. What a tragedy. What a waste. Oh, well, never mind. Pass me the mini eggs, and we carry on. But in this series, we're considering some of the really big questions of life. And today's question is this. Did Jesus die a pointless death? Well, the answer, I hope we'll see, is no, he didn't die a pointless death. And the answer is supplied by the prophet Isaiah in that passage that Louise read out for us. He wrote 700 years or so before Jesus' death, and he predicted the events of his death. And he explains not only that they were going to happen, but also he explains the point of them, why they happened. And he does so in a very, very clearly structured way. If you like, this whole chunk of Isaiah that we're looking at a little portion of, which starts in Isaiah chapter 52, verse 13, is like a mega sandwich, a five-layer double-decker sandwich. And in the center of this sandwich, we get these verses that Louise read out for us, verses 4 to 6. And at the center of the center is verse 5 that we're going to focus in on. So what is the point then? what is the point of Jesus' death? Well, the reason, if we understand it rightly, should shock us. It's the year of Russian costume drama, isn't it? At least on the BBC it is. So I'm going to borrow from Dostoevsky and Tolstoy and maybe a bit from the BBC. First of all, then, Crime and Punishment. And secondly, War and Peace. Crime and Punishment, War and Peace. Let's start with Crime and Punishment. Look down with me at the passage, if you would, and see what is ours. Verse 4, our griefs, our sorrows. Verse 5, our transgressions, our iniquities. Verse 6, we have gone astray, the iniquity of us all. He's not exactly laying on the compliments, is he? It's as if he reads off a rap sheet, but it's not some kind of TV crime drama. It is us, and we are in court, and he reads off our crimes and the effects, the consequences of those crimes. So we get there in that central verse, in verse 5, transgressions are mentioned. What's that? Well, it means rebellion, treason against the God who made us. Well, maybe that sounds a bit over the top. Treason? Me? Surely not. But let me ask this question. Who's in charge? Who has the right to call the shots in your life? Who is it? Well, for most of us, the answer is, I do. I'm in charge. I call the shots, at least mostly, as much as I can. I'm free, mostly. As long, of course, as no one gets hurt. Transgressions, but also iniquities, which means the twistedness of human nature, like a car that's been wrecked in an accident. But we're like that naturally, twistedness. We see that, don't we, all the time. In Syria, just today, shockingly, on our TV screens. In Brussels, where I used to live, those attacks. But we see glimpses elsewhere as well, not just on our TV screens, but in our hearts. So we want to twist the rules as well. We're twisted. Make our own rules instead. We're twisted. But it gets worse, because verse 6 also, sheep gone astray. And here it gets a little bit embarrassing and awkward. It's saying that we are like your average dopey sheep. We've all wandered off. I don't know whether you've had much experience of sheep. Well, here's an experience that my father had a few years back. He was driving in his car in the fast lane of the motorway, and a wandering sheep hit his car head-on in the fast lane of the motorway. His car was a complete write-off. We were so thankful that he didn't get injured, and the sheep was dead. Apologies to the vegetarians amongst us, but the policeman walked up to my dad, and the car was a complete state, and he wasn't exactly diplomatic, and he said, "Lamb chops for dinner, sir." And as Dad actually got home, guess what was on the menu that my mum had cooked that evening? It was, would you believe it, lamb chops. But Isaiah is saying to us, it is like wandering in the fast lane of the motorway, like a sheep. And that is us. Except that it's not an accident. We have turned, it says, to our own way. We are like sheep that have turned off the path, taken our own road, making our own way in life, doing our own thing, doing our own way of doing things. I'll do it my way is the theme tune of our lives. We wander after whatever we fancy. We wander after whoever we fancy. We do that whenever we fancy. As long as we can afford it, as long as hopefully no one gets hurt in the process. Everyone loves inclusivity, don't they? But not this kind of inclusivity. But it is all of us. It says all we like sheep. Each of us have done it. It is not, you see, just merely a herd mentality. And it is pretty shocking. It is pretty uncomfortable reading. It's not very comfortable to say, to be honest. It's not a very feel-good factor. Maybe we're thinking again, just pass me the mini eggs and let's move on. I'm starting to prefer Christmas to Easter now. Where is the door? Let me out of here. It's not how our culture thinks either, is it? Normally, we divide people up, don't we? And normally there are the good people. They're the ones who get the Nobel Prizes and the knighthoods and the awards and the plaudits. People like David Attenborough, the national treasure, who cares about the world and shows us how to do that. Eddie Izzard, 27 marathons in 27 days for Sport Relief. They're the good people. Then there are the bad people, the terrorists in Brussels, where I used to live. The murderers, the rapists, they're the real criminals. These days, people want to add in the politicians and the bankers. Apologies if you're a banker, but that's what people say. And some people even want to add in Donald Trump for good measure. But then there's the rest. And we're semi-good, or more mixed, if you like. Not perfect, but trying our best. But just above the line. Just about. That's where we put ourselves. Just about above the line. But this passage is saying we've crossed the line. We're not above the line, but not in a good way. We have crossed the line, you see, with God. Because we haven't loved him, the one who made us, the one who's given us everything. He we've rejected completely. And we haven't loved him, and we've taken his stuff, but not him. And so it turns out that we have crimes. And the crime is treason. And it's in my heart, and it affects the way I live. And it is my way that counts. And it is there all too often. And the guilt comes with it. I keep it hidden. I don't let people know most of the time what I'm really like. But it is true. And it is me. And it is all of us. But that's not all, because our crime also deserves punishment. There is crime and there is punishment. Look again at verse 5, that central verse. Pierced, crushed, punishment, wounds. We want justice, don't we? We want Bond to deal with the bad guys. We want God to deal with the terrorists, the serial killers, the murderers, the rapists. We want him to do that, don't we? And it's right that he does that. We want him then to deal with the others as well, the tax evaders, the cheats, the people who get away with it. But sooner or later, he has to deal with us as well. He has to punish us. It's not something that we enjoy talking about. It isn't the way to win friends and influence people. Some of us are maybe thinking, that just sounds a little bit too medieval for me, actually. So medieval, this kind of hell business makes us feel guilty and uptight, really. It's your way of keeping people under control and keeping the churches full. Or maybe we're familiar with this idea, and maybe we're just tempted to switch off because we've heard it all so many times. It's become familiar to us. And we've grown cold to it. But this is real. And hell is real enough. The punishment is real. And it isn't where my mates are, where we get to hang out and have a laugh. It is a place where everything good that we have in this world, that God has given us, is taken away, is gone. There's no laughter, there's no friendships, there's no satisfaction in hell. All of those good things from God are gone. But actually, if that weren't shocking enough, there is a shock further to come in this passage. Because you see, it is our crime, but it is not our punishment. Someone else, you see, takes our place. Jesus, he takes our place. On the cross, it is him. 7 times it says he or him in this little short section. Jesus steps into history, and when he does that, he stands in to deal with my personal history, my rejection of him, my rebellion. In sport, we all understand substitutes, or at least most of us do. In my case, I once got a school report that said Philip is uncoordinated, so I generally wasn't the substitute. But this is not sport, it is court. It is God's court. And in God's courtroom, here, God's king steps in and he is the substitute. As John Stott said, God gave himself to save us from himself. God himself gave himself to save us from himself. I mean, just think about that for a minute. It's hard to imagine, isn't it? But this in our passage is what hell felt like for Jesus. This is how much God loves us in this passage. He's punished so that we don't have to be. He bears it. He carries it. He shoulders it. He's struck. He's smitten. He's afflicted. He is pierced, fatally pierced, like when St. George pierced the dragon. That kind of piercing. He is crushed, broken to pieces. It's moving, isn't it? And this is the Jesus. This is the story of Easter. Who is he? Well, he is King of the universe. He is the Jesus of history. And God, the Lord, laid it all on him. It wasn't an accidental tragedy. It was a deliberate plan that God had in mind. He wasn't, you see, surprised by events, caught unawares, and just going with the flow. Now, more than a few people have found this kind of thing pretty distasteful. And recently, some have called this cosmic child abuse. And you can understand why they might be tempted to say that, and why they might think this leaves just a bitter taste in the mouth. But it isn't child abuse, because Jesus goes there willingly. It's not foisted on him. It's not abusive. He goes there. No one twists his arm behind his back. Instead, he willingly holds out his arms as nails are driven in, as he hangs there, as he dies. In many ways, I guess our culture, and perhaps even us, prefer Christmas to Easter. But without Easter, without this message, without Jesus taking our place, well, we end up with either pessimism or over-optimism. And I don't think there's an option aside from those two. Pessimism, despair, nowhere to go with our guilt, even the low-grade kind of guilt. The musician Dave Grohl says, "Guilt is cancer. Guilt will confine you, torture you, destroy you as an artist. It's a black wall. It's a thief. It is like we are loaded down. It is like we are loaded down with luggage, the kind of luggage that you used to buy before they put all those wheels on it so that you could easily cart it around. We are loaded down." So there is pessimism, but there is also alternatively over-optimism on the other hand. We have to pretend that we're not that bad, that we haven't got crimes, that there's no rap sheet. Here's the kind of self-help advice that you find online. Be less self-critical. Practice positive affirmations. Just be more affirming. But that doesn't work, does it? We know it. Because it doesn't offer any comfort in the face of our real problem. Not even comfort food and mini eggs. And we've got a few at the back there, so help yourself. But they don't offer that much comfort either, do they? In the face of this problem. Crime and punishment. But there is real comfort, because secondly, war and peace, war and peace. Verse 5, the result of Jesus' death is an end to war, if you like, an end to hostilities between us and God. There is peace. Peace with God, verse 5 tells us. And now, at last, we can breathe. We can breathe again. It is the fresh air of Easter. Of the Easter message. Some of you may know that word peace is the word shalom, but it's more than simply a greeting. It is a promise. It is a promise of a restored relationship with God. If you like, it is vertical peace. But there is more than that, because there is also horizontal peace ultimately in the future, in a new world to come. And only then will there be an end to war zones in the Middle East, in the streets of Brussels. And we all want that peace, don't we? So, our question, did Jesus die a pointless death? Was it just a tragedy? No, it wasn't. The tragedy would be to miss out on what is on offer here, as Jesus, with outstretched arms, offers us peace and asks us, will you accept it? Have you accepted it? That's all we need to do, accept it. On the 13th of January 1982, Air Florida Flight 90 got into trouble, and it went nose down into the Potomac River just outside Washington, D.C. Amazingly, though, amongst all the deaths and the carnage, there were six survivors. Just six, that is it. People tried to save them as they were there, clinging from the wreckage in ice-cold water. People knotted scarves and even fan belts that they ripped off cars together to try and reach them, but it couldn't reach far enough. Someone tried to dive in off the bank, but it was just too cold and they couldn't get to them. But then after 20 minutes, a rescue chopper, flew overhead and it dropped out a line with a rescue ring around it. And a man called Arland Chubb Williams Jr., an ordinary guy, 46 years old, a federal bank examiner, that was his job, nothing special. He was even scared of water earlier on in life. But he took the ring and he handed it to someone, one of those six survivors. And then he did it again, twice. And then he did it again, three times. And then as the chopper came back again, he vanished. He disappeared under the water, exhausted by his efforts. All of it live on TV. But it had a point, you see, what he did. By his death, he rescued others. And all they had to do was accept it, was take the lifeline that was being offered to them. And so will we take it? Will we do that? Normally Christmas is the time when you get all the gifts, isn't it, rather than Easter time. Although increasingly, if you look online on Amazon, there are gift list suggestions for Easter, which as far as I can tell, it involves bunnies and eggs and a few other things like that. But this is the best gift of the lot. This is better than the whole of Christmas combined. And yet some people still reject it, don't they? I think they reject it for one of two reasons. Either they don't think they have a crime to answer for. They think, I'm okay, I go to church, I pray, I'm a good person, I try my best. But when the crime is treason, it doesn't matter whether you score a 2 or a 9 or whatever out of 10 in the morality stakes. It's not enough when the crime is treason. Others reject it because they don't like this punishment idea. It's not so much the crime, it's more the punishment idea that they don't like. Jesus' death in our place seems too barbaric, maybe for some. But if we think like that and we reject it on those grounds, well, the problem, it doesn't go away. The punishment is still there. And we can bear our own punishment. There is that option. But why would you? Why would you do that when God has gone to such lengths to offer you this lifeline, this gift, out of love at Easter? Or maybe we've already accepted the gift. Maybe we've done that. Well, if that's the case, it's something to shout out about, isn't it? It is the best comfort there is. It is the thing to dwell on and mull over and be thankful for this Easter time. Happy Easter. Thanks for listening.